late lunch before going back to work when my faithful office manager, Kelly, called and said, "Pastor, there's a young man here from England who's looking for a place to stay. Any ideas?" Now, aside from the fact that this visitor was from England, this was not an unusual occurrence. People are always coming to churches for help. And this church was always trying to do what we could, but on this particular day, I knew that the community shelter was closed for the season. And the day shelter wasn't open on Tuesdays. And the folks in the congregation I would normally call to host had just hosted a large group. You know why? Because I put my sermon on top of the computer.
COVID issues. We're still learning. Okay, better? Now, where was I? Oh, so the people that I would normally call in the congregation who would open their homes had just hosted a group of young Palestinian Lutheran teenagers the week before, and I felt maybe I had outstayed my requests, too many requests at once. So I told Kelly, "Tell him to call the fire station," and I hung up. An hour later, I was sitting at my desk back at the church, and I saw a young man come in, and it was the same one who had called. So I went out to find out the story, and I found out that he was 20 years old. His name was Matthew, and he was attempting to travel by bicycle from Seattle to New York on $10 a day. That day, he had biked 60 miles and just needed a place to sleep for the night. So I flipped aimlessly through the church directory, trying to think of someone I could call. And I looked at the church member sitting there who was waiting to have a meeting with me, and I thought, what do I do? The last thing I really wanted that night was a stranger staying in my home. But finally I said, "You can stay at my place." Now we could have an entire conversation about the wisdom of that decision at another time. But my kids thought this was great. When they came home from school with their friends, here was this exotic visitor, and they exclaimed, "He sounds just like Harry Potter." Over dinner, Matthew told me a bit more of his story. Biking cross-country on a budget of $10 a day means relying on the kindness of strangers for shelter and food. He told that he had a varied reception at churches. At one large inner city church, he stopped to ask for help, and even before he got the words out, and no eye contact at all, the answer was no. He saw someone else sitting in a neighboring office and asked to talk to her, but was told she'll tell you no too. Another pastor happily took Matthew home, but then spent the entire dinner quizzing him about whether he was going to heaven. When Matthew answered yes, the pastor followed up with, "Are you sure?" Sadly, fire stations were more welcoming than most churches. Another host welcomed Matthew into his home and showed off a very large arsenal of weapons. Matthew commented to me, "We just don't have guns like that in the UK. What possible use do Americans have for an assault rifle in their home anyway?" A very good question. Indeed. But my favorite story of Matthew's journey across the U.S. was of staying at a Catholic monastery in North Dakota. Now, Matthew was an outgoing person, a necessary skill if you're trying to make an adventure that requires asking for help multiple times a day. But this was a contemplative monastery, in other words, no talking. And Matthew was struggling with the idea of eating dinner in silence after biking in silence all day. The dinner, though silent, was delicious. He said there were plates and plates of food, and then one of the monks brought out the largest barrel of Rocky Road ice cream he had ever seen, and they all ate their fill. Although they couldn't share conversation, the brothers of the monastery saw Matthew's visit as an occasion for celebration. They didn't hesitate to welcome a stranger into their midst, because for them, hospitality was an essential part of their life together. The morning after Matthew's stay in my home, I woke early to find all the dishes washed and a $10 bill with a note that said, "Thank you for sharing your home with me. Do not forget to entertain strangers, for by doing so, some people have entertained angels. without knowing it. Now, was Matthew an angel? I think so, but not because he was particularly saintly. In fact, one might rightly criticize the great privilege that he showed, having an adventure that required him to often take the beds of those who were truly experiencing homelessness. But Matthew was an angel in the sense that he brought into my home a message that I needed to hear. His unexpected visit and the stories he shared of the varied kinds of hospitality and inhospitality that he received challenged me to reconsider the place of hospitality in our lives of faith. Hear once again those words from our second reading from Hebrews today. Let mutual love continue. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by doing so, some have entertained angels without knowing it. Now, the letter to the Hebrews was written sometime in the first century, probably before the destruction of the temple in 70 AD. And though it has often historically been attributed to the Apostle Paul and even to Luke, scholars today think it was probably written by a woman, and most likely Priscilla, a missionary who traveled and lived and worked with Paul. But whoever the author is, it seems that clear to me that the letter was intended as encouragement. Encouragement for this young Christian community struggling to keep the faith. Internal debates were happening within this community over issues such as whether non-Jews needed to first become Jews before they became Christians, and also whether Jewish people needed to completely disavow their religious practices if they chose to follow Jesus. Facing such internal contentious divisions in the community, as well as persecution from the outside, was apparently causing some to reconsider the whole project. After all, although he was resurrected from the dead, Jesus did leave them when he was ascended into heaven, and that didn't seem very Messiah-like, especially if you'd been expecting a king wearing a crown and not hanging on a cross. For this reason, I think the letter to the Hebrews can sound a little bit like a practical list of do's and don'ts when facing conflict. Do this, don't do that. Be like this, don't be like that. But that makes sense in a way, because haven't we all wished at one time or another to have a guidebook to how to live in community? The guides I would like to read include How to Survive a Pandemic, How Not to Lose Your Cool When Your Friends and Family Are Supporting a Narcissistic Dictator, How to Navigate an Increasingly Divided Country and Not Lose Your Soul. And Priscilla might say to us, keep on loving. Keep on loving. Love by showing hospitality. Love by keeping your promises. Love those who are suffering. Love the one life you were given. Love God. And remember that Jesus Christ is the same yesterday and today and forever. In other words, in a world that is rapidly changing and often scary, and even in the midst of internal confusion and strife, hold on to what is sure and certain. Hold on to love and hold on to Jesus. Notice that in this list, hospitality is right at the top. It's at the top of this list of essential practices. It's not merely a nice thing that we do when we show hospitality. It's foundational for followers of Jesus. Showing hospitality is actually part of the fabric that knits us together. It strengthens our faith. It creates community. Furthermore, the author of Hebrews tells us that when we cast our nets wide, when we expand our circle, we are also making space for messages from God, otherwise known as angels, or as you may have learned it first in Sunday school, angels unawares. In May of this year, just before I came to my first visit to UniLu, I happened to have a chance to go to Rome for a pastor's conference. And one of the highlights was visiting the Vatican, of course. Since 2019, there's been a life-size bronze statue in Vatican Square called Angels Unawares. It's a sculpture of a boat filled with people of various ages and ethnicities and cultures, intended to represent migrants and refugees seeking a home. Springing from the midst of this sculpture, from the middle of the people, are angel wings, a symbol of the presence of the sacred among them. Now, the sculpture was inaugurated on the 105th World Day of Migrants and Refugees in the Vatican. But when it was installed, Pope Francis said that this was not only about refugees. Actually, he said he hoped this artwork would remind Christians everywhere of the evangelical challenge of hospitality. The evangelical challenge of hospitality. The truth is that showing hospitality can be a challenge. As much as we would like to open our homes and ourselves to strangers every day, there are obstacles. Fear is one. Healthy boundaries is another. In the case of refugees and the unhoused, are we called just to provide a bed for the night? Or do we show hospitality by changing the unjust systems that caused the problem in the first place? Or both? What should Christian hospitality look like? I think the answer is as varied as our communities and our abilities and the needs of those around us. Now, here at UniLu, in my short time, I've come to understand that hospitality is truly an essential part of the identity of this community. From the very beginning, from its founding, this community has welcomed strangers into its midst, students and professors from around the world and from around the country. They come bringing their own ideas and backgrounds, gifts and talents, and then just as quickly, they go out to new places and new communities. Now, can that be a challenge at times, to stick together in such a diverse and transitional place? For sure it is. But that hospitality is part of the fabric that has made this such a strong and faithful community through many pastors and several renovations and a changing world that lies just outside the walls of this church. The evangelical call to hospitality is then both a challenge and a joy, but I would also say, looking back to that letter to the Hebrews, that showing hospitality is also a form of resistance. By casting wide our doors and breaking down walls, by making the circle ever larger, we make the separation between ourselves and others ever smaller. And this is how we resist. This is how we resist the empire of fear and division. This is how we resist greed and the acceptance of inequality. This is how we resist a culture of indifference. This is how we resist hatred and death, and rather choose love and life. The Persian poet Hafiz wrote, "There are always a few like me who are house-sitting for God. We share God's royal duties." House-sitting for God sounds to me like an excellent mission statement as we begin this new season of the church. In our homes, within this church community, in our workplaces, and especially in the creation that God has given us, we remember that we are house sitters for God, called to share the radical love and hospitality that God herself showed us first. And by doing so, we welcome angels without knowing it. May the peace of God, which passes all understanding, keep our hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. Amen.